Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
John!
What?
Red 7!
I don't know what Red 7 means.
Hot route!
I don't... What is hot route?
Will you just go stand on the other side, please?
Down! Ready, down, set, hut, 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 hut!
Hit me!
Booyah! That's what we call a sack lunch! Nom 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 nom!
It's time for the Soonerscoop.com postgame show presented by Eskridge Lexus in Oklahoma City. Eskridge Lexus is the official travel partner of Soonerscoop.com podcasts. Now, here's your road crew, Kerry, Eddie, and Bob, wrapping up all the action and reaction from this week's game.
All right, it is the final Eskridge Lexus postgame show of the season. That's unbelievable. It is over. The season like none other that we've experienced before, and a bowl game like we haven't experienced in a very long time, is over as Oklahoma beats Auburn, or Auburn, Florida. It's late. 55-20. It felt familiar. And the last thing that I remembered was, oh, you putting a beat down on Auburn, but it wasn't this bad. And that Auburn team wasn't as bad as the Florida team we saw, especially defensively tonight. But boy, you didn't really know what to expect. You thought Oklahoma had the edge in this thing just because you knew the opt-outs were there, and then you started hearing kind of more about the defenses, defense being having some opt-outs and having maybe some COVID situations. And it was a very depleted Florida team, but give it up to Oklahoma. They went out, built that 17-0. I mean, you can't ignore the fact that they intercepted Kyle Trask three times in the first quarter tonight, regardless who he was missing.
Kyle Trask had turned the ball over five times this season. He turned the ball over three times on the first, what, four possessions of the game? Just an incredible performance from top to bottom. It was the most complete game that I think I have seen an Oklahoma team play. I don't want to say something crazy, because the 2017 team was obviously really good offensively. I mean, it's been a long time. I'd have to think about it for a second, but that was an ass kicking. And special apologies for Dan Mullen for having to take time out of his Wednesday night to come down here and coach a team that he didn't really want to be around. What a prick he is.
Now, I read his transcripts. I didn't hear him or see them. Did he come off that big of an ass?
Well, I mean, the quote that I saw that really pissed me off was something to the effect, and he threw his players under the bus, but it was something to the effect of the 2020 Florida Gators,
right,
final game was 11 days ago.
Right.
Like, get out of here, dude.
I read that, and yeah, I mean, he is, look, that is your SEC coach right there.
Oh, it's just arrogant.
That's your,
it's arrogance.
I don't know if it's arrogance. It's just that they look for any way to not take blame for bad things happening.
Like,
it really
he has
is.
To go down to that meeting with the other 11 or the other 13 coaches and make excuses about why he got his ass whooped.
Well, and it's their third loss in a row to end the season.
Yeah,
too.
They lost three games in a row at the end of the
season that started out so promising.
They literally benched a Heisman finalist tonight. I mean, are we going to call it a benching?
I think they might have had that plan to just kind
of
like, look, if
take
it doesn't go
of
well,
it. Yeah,
we're going to get him out of there fast.
The first and the third interception, like the pick six to Trey Norwood and then the one to Woody in the end zone, they were just floated out there.
They're bad passes.
It's like, what is this guy?
And then the one that Asamoah intercepted was just wildly inaccurate.
I mean, that's one of those plays, though, that just Oklahoma defensively hasn't had in the last, you know, couple years. And I mean,
and
it's
Woody
starting to come together.
Woody almost had another one.
Yeah.
And then wasn't there a Fields
Pat
one?
Pat Fields almost had one as well.
That he could have had.
It was just unbelievable. And I mean, just a
but
thorough
the thing about it is, here's the thing about it. And a lot of this is the fact that they kept bringing in the other quarterback. But you look at like pressure that OU was able, they didn't get a whole lot of pressure on
No.
on Kyle Trask. They had four tackles for losses today. They had one sack. Nick Benito had a sack.
And that was one of those that was almost a coverage sack because he stood back there for a second and Benito had to work all the way back around to him.
And they had five quarterback hurries. So it wasn't like they were just harassing the quarterbacks in the pocket all
they
night.
They did enough, though, to make it uneasy, I think, on them.
I think the interception Woody Washington had in the end zone, that was a little bit of pressure in his face, and he just didn't get the ball out very strong.
Yeah. No, it was, I mean, as soon as the ball went in the air, you could just feel it. You know, it's one of those, while I was shooting and stuff, it's like you could feel that the fans saw what was coming. They knew that Woody Washington was in shape, and, it's definitely not making excuses for Florida, but I do think that, you know, whoever it is down there, if it's Pitts or Tony or, you know, whoever, he probably puts up a little bit more of a fight.
Yeah, I mean,
Kyle Trask's dad, by the way, on Facebook was unbelievable on Saturday night or Wednesday night.
I saw people alluding to it, but I didn't actually see what
it was.
Went
he was
down.
Basically just bitching about, like, we need guys that can catch the ball. We need, you know, and then he was going after Todd Grantham.
I saw that he was going after Todd Grantham, yeah.
By the way, real quick, I think 25 people have contacted me tonight and said that they really wanted a drunk pod. And I was planning on having a couple beverages, but we're in this godforsaken state of Texas.
Dry counties.
Where they don't serve beer. That you can't buy alcohol after midnight. So that's on me. I didn't prepare. I didn't complain. Prepared for the night. And that's my fault. So I apologize to everybody out there.
We're doing this so late. Well, we don't. I thought maybe we would have Pro Football Focus grades, but we don't have anything at this point. I was hoping to kind of go over, especially defensively, some of the snap counts, because I got to say this about OU's defense before I talk about Florida's defense, which was putrid. OU tonight, Shane Witter emerged.
God.
As a legitimate linebacker in the future.
He's a dude. I think everybody like thought it at the same time. I think it was one of the possessions, and it was one of the early possessions in the third quarter. He made two back-to-back plays, and it was like, damn.
And look, we don't know because the receiver position was so decimated, but if you had to make a judgment call off of one game, Trey Brown was addition by subtraction tonight.
I mean, just...
Did you see the plays DJ Graham made over the middle, knocking the ball out?
I was standing next to Caden McFarlane. We were shooting video, and on the ball that he broke up, kind of came over the... Mm-hmm. Or underneath.
It was that pass they were completing all night.
Yeah, and I just turned to him, and we, like, said this exact same thing at the same time. It's like, that play hasn't been made by a cornerback in a long, long time at Oklahoma.
And it was Asamoah that was making those plays earlier
in
the game.
I thought Asamoah played really well in the first half.
He did.
I mean, they definitely went out and set a tone. And, you know, I think even if you go back to when it was 17-10 right after the Ramondre Stevenson fumble, the only bad thing that the running backs did on Wednesday night.
Yeah.
I mean, that was a big stop to hold them to a field goal, 17-13. And then all of a sudden Drake Stoops fumbles and he falls back on the ball. And, you know, two plays later,
Drake
Oklahoma
Stoops
is 24-13.
It was pretty good tonight.
He had a hell of a block on the McGowan long run in the fourth quarter.
We've had an interesting couple of days on the board leading up to the game with the whole Jaden Hazelwood thing. Like somehow,
and then we're
Charleston
driving down
Rambo
the day.
And Drake Stoops have become the reason that Jaden Hazelwood is not here.
I mean, I don't know what's going on with Jaden Hazelwood. I think everybody has seen the video that was put out today. It's maybe one of the worst looks.
Because we put it out there.
It's maybe one of the worst looks I've ever seen for somebody to opt out of a game and then is running full-on routes on air the day of the game because he's trying to get healthy. That just didn't make a whole lot of sense to me.
Well, and I got the sense that maybe the stuff about, you know, he's not feeling healthy kind of came from his trainer.
Yeah. Well, there are two very different like stories out there, aren't there?
Yes.
Like one side is saying, oh, everybody's cool with it. And then the other side is, this is just kind of strange.
You know, I mean, and back to Dan Mullen in his post game, and Lincoln was even this a little bit because I asked him about opt outs.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have to expand the playoffs to keep this from happening? And he said it's two completely separate issues. But I will say, I did agree with Dan Mullen in that opt-outs had not been a problem for them going to New Year's Six bowls until this year.
Sure. And I think that you're going to see that across the landscape of college football. I mean, you're right.
But we have to get out. We really do have to get out of COVID land.
Sure.
Before we start saying that anything's a problem.
I don't think anybody opted out because of COVID, though.
I think people opted out just because of the shit year that they've
been through. They were sick of being under quarantine, you know, like, and it wasn't a real bubble.
And I'll say this, Dan Mullen, I read his transcript. I didn't hear him because Lincoln was going at the same time. He reminded me a lot of stuff that Bob Stoops would say, which is, you know, the bowl games are a lot of times, he was like, we went to the Orange Bowl. It was the first time a lot of these guys ever saw the ocean.
Yeah.
Like, bowl games are kind of like, studying abroad a little bit. Like, you get to see things and experience things that you've never got to experience
before.
Well,
let's be honest. Like, the first couple of days of a bowl trip, well, at least for the media, is, I mean,
drinking.
You go out. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the players don't go out a whole lot. Like, I remember the horror stories that they always told about Bob, that first bowl practice when you get on site, he'd run your ass until you threw up. And it's just, it's different nowadays.
But I mean, I think the whole thing is bowls are a much bigger reward than they were this year. Like, the bowls were really, unless you're playing
for
a national title, bowl is just an away game.
Yeah. Yeah. This was
that
this,
you could get hurt in.
This year sucked. It sucked to be a player.
Like,
in the
Tylan Wallace
trip.
Thing, maybe that doesn't happen if they're playing at the Valero Alamo Bowl and they've been there for 9 straight days.
I just thought that was the weirdest. Like, they can say whatever they want to say. It's
don't you think it was De'Aaron King getting hurt and maybe
a little bit
him probably going and saying, "Look, I'm done here."
And like, I really like Tylan Wallace, but if that's, and I've never been in this spot, so I guess I can never say that I would make this decision, but it's like a 10-point game. I don't know if that's the first thing that pops into my mind.
Have receivers taken over as the softest position?
Oh, it's the most drama-filled, softest position in
sports.
Are
they softer than kickers?
Softer than power forwards. I know that. Power forwards in the NBA.
I mean, it's bizarre.
It's really, they're divas a little bit, but
and they become bigger and bigger divas. And I think 7-on-7 might have something to do with that.
Yeah, I could buy into that. I could buy into that for sure. It was really weird. But, I mean,
it's like we were talking the other day about in Florida, how physical it is.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's physical because defensive backs basically try and punch receivers off the line of scrimmage.
Yeah, it's a fist fight to get open.
It's actually a slap fight.
Well, yeah, that's true. That's true. Especially down in Florida.
Nobody's, you know, close fisting punching people off the line. It's not like when you watch offensive and defense. Remember that time when DJ Ward almost got his soul smacked out of him?
Like, that's, I mean, those are big bodies going against each other. Get the,
I mean, that was basically a Russian slap fight that we watched that day. Now they're popular, but it was a Russian slap. It was like literally a guy just wailing, you know, just slapping DJ Ward across the face as hard as he possibly could.
Sure.
And DJ Ward just walked away. But like, receivers and DBs aren't doing that kind of shit.
No, they're just talking shit to each other.
Yeah. I saw one of the Florida players try and goad Buki into something tonight. Buki, who did not play bad tonight.
How much did Buki play just overall? I think that's one of those PFF things that I'd like to see because I felt like he really...
They played Dime a lot tonight.
Tell you what, man, the between the trio of Trey Norwood and then the two corners with DJ Graham and Jaden Davis, I thought
played
pretty well
tonight
as well.
Yeah.
And then Woody Washington, the future of that position looks really bright.
I will say this, if you were upset with the play, the touchdown that they scored at the end, just look who was on the field. It was the last of the last string.
Tanner Schaefer got in tonight on the offensive side. Like, they cleared the benches.
Touchdown, guy, Chance Sylvie was, I think, on the coverage.
Oh, was he really?
Brian Meade was out there on the field. I think, I mean, there were some people that just don't, but I think Eaton was out there.
I was getting in position for the trophy presentation, which created one of the greatest moments in Oklahoma football history with the Malcolm Kelly rep.
That was pretty impressive.
I thought David Owegwu played really good tonight,
too. Yeah, he did. I mean, they're young linebackers. I mean, we're talking about their young cornerbacks. Their young linebackers are now becoming that next big wave.
No,
team.
The obvious thing is out there. They need to get a couple of the defensive linemen to come back, and it sounds like Nick Benito and Isaiah Thomas were at least hinting towards something like that tonight on Twitter.
Isaiah Thomas actually said he was coming back. But Nick Benito was the one that was kind of cryptic about it, but it it made you believe that you should.
I mean,
be
if you can get
positive.
If you can get a Ronnie Perkins or a Perrion Winfrey, and we'll talk about it for, you know, 7 months now until the start
We've
of the season.
Never talked to Perrion Winfrey, so there's no chance you're gonna hear us ask him.
Well, we will talk about him though.
Yeah.
I mean, the expectations are going to be about as high as I can ever remember. And it's, I think a lot of it is going to have to do with the way that this season ended and the way that they were able to pick themselves up off of the 2-1 mat. And I mean,
1-2
or 1-2. Yeah. I wish they were 2-1. Probably
be they'd
covering
be in the playoffs,
a playoff game on Friday if that was the case. But it was a very impressive, dominant performance. And if have you taken a look at any of the postgame notes? Like, as far as
the bowl stuff, I mean, they were announcing a lot of it in the press box. 55 points is the most OU's 55
points
scored.
Most scored, 684 total yards. I think maybe the most impressive stat of the entire night is one of the ones that they sent out late was OU averaged 10.9 a carry.
Yeah, and it's a Cotton Bowl record.
It's a school record.
No, yeah, 10.8 yard carry. That's a school record in a bowl game. Yeah,
for a single game. No, ever.
Wow.
At Oklahoma.
Okay, we got to talk about this Florida defense because they did the same play on that. Was that the Mark? I believe it was the Marcus Major touchdown, the last one. That was the same play where Jordan Evans' father summoned him to come home so they could watch tape together. And
was it really?
No, I mean, you remember it was that sideline thing where the running back is there and you try and push him out just softly.
Yeah.
And he just ran right through him. Yeah. Because they just, I mean, at that point, Florida had quit. It was embarrassing for them.
I thought the Samaje, or the Samaje, he looked like Samaje tonight. I thought the Ramondre Stevenson touchdown was even more impressive.
That was very, I've seen Texas, you know, be soft like that before, too. That reminded me kind of the CeeDee Lamb, five people around
him
running it into the
against
end zone.
Texas.
And then I thought the Theo Weese was just like a casual trot into the end zone.
Nobody touched him.
It was like he just galloped through.
Nobody touched him.
Open fields,
I mean, that
of
was,
Gators.
It was unbelievable. Nobody touched him. Nobody even like really came close to him.
No.
He was just so under control. And we can officially.
And he does, I mean, he is a smooth runner. Like,
yeah.
It's not like when McGowan broke in the open field. You knew. I've never seen someone break into the open field and show us that he has no confidence whatsoever that he's going to make it to the end zone.
There was a point at about like the 30, maybe the 25. It was like, all right, he's going to make one last like ditch effort to push it into another gear, and he just couldn't get there.
But there was no like. Usually, you'll see guys like cut across the field.
Oh,
like,
he was
start
just
cutting.
Straight line.
He was just like, I have to keep going as fast as I can because these guys are going to catch up with
Well,
me.
We can officially say that Kamar Wheaton was scared off by Marcus Major, right? Marcus Major and Seth McGowan.
Come
That's why
I mean,
he didn't
Marcus
go to Oklahoma.
Marcus Major, man, he was really good
I thought
tonight.
He was excellent tonight.
Like, he was what I thought he would
yes.
be as a college running back.
Now, I guess we do have to say, like, I mean, Florida defensively was putrid. Like, Ty Grantham has to get his ass fired,
That's
how does Florida get that bad defensively?
That defense.
Shit, people were saying about that about Oklahoma the last 5 years.
I know. I mean, that looked. I don't know that Oklahoma's defense was that bad in 2017.
I mean, I remember you talking about on the U40 this week about Najee Harris and how he just basically ran through Florida. You look at the numbers tonight, and like it's just incredible to see.
Go look up Najee Harris's night in the SEC championship. I'm curious what he did compared to what OU did.
It was one of those things, too, that I didn't realize that Ramondre was having the type of night he had until they flashed it up on the big board.
Mm-hmm.
It was like 179 yards, and I was like,
because every time he was running, he was running for 40 yards
or
20
yards.
Yeah,
25 yards a carry.
By the way, Seth McGowan averaged 73 yards per carry tonight.
Just unbelievable.
One run, 73 yards.
Just unbelievable.
Okay, and guess what? I guarantee you Charleston Rambo has a Sooner Scoop membership.
We got to apologize.
I didn't really shit on him.
I guess I have to apologize. I got to apologize.
You
I'm
and
sorry,
the entire
Charleston.
Board.
But that was
but
the
it's
guy.
Frustrating because
that was
yeah.
the guy that we thought he was.
Where was
be.
That guy all year?
Just I have no idea. Najee Harris, 31 carries, 178 yards, 5.7 a carry, two touchdowns.
What was his receiving, though? Because they threw the ball up to him a lot.
Five receptions, 67, three touchdowns, 13-4 a reception.
Ramondre Stevenson makes him look. Of course, it's not the same defense. They missed what Mullen said afterwards. If there was a defensive lineman requirement, they would have fallen short there. They had to get a guy medically cleared just to be able to have enough bodies to play.
Whatever. Dan Mullen's a loser.
I don't know. This is just one of those things. Like after watching that Baylor Oklahoma State game, I really was like, I can see why people cancel. I can see, like, Missouri would have been terrible if they would have played, I'm sure.
What do you mean, Baylor?
When Oklahoma State went to Baylor at the end of the year, they were having all the COVID problems, and they just waxed their ass.
Yeah. It was just, I mean, it was an absolute.
But no, I mean, as bad as Florida's defense was, we don't need to keep talking about it because it was awful.
No, OU was very, very good.
They
tonight.
Were equally as good on the other side.
Sure.
So, I mean, you can point to so many people tonight that played well.
I was thinking about this driving over here. It's like, you could probably try and point out guys that didn't play well because so many guys did play well.
Brian Meade's one of the only ones.
I'm not going to down my guy like that, but that was.
There was one play that was just so bad.
It was against, like, the third string quarterback when he, like, out in the open field.
Yep.
He at least ran him down and made the tackle.
I don't think he did.
Oh, he didn't?
No.
I thought he did. I got blocked out.
I think
out.
He ran about 10 yards past him.
Like, yeah, there was a moment where, like,
it was
like
he was
he
standing still.
Him. I was like, oh, God. That's okay. He probably. I wonder if he. What is he a junior? Is he a redshirt junior? Meade?
That's a good question.
See a senior.
I want to say we know it doesn't matter.
Yeah, that's why I mean, I guess if you're a senior, maybe they tell him, hey.
But I mean, this night.
Yeah, he's a redshirt senior.
I did love the fans in the SEC chants that started ringing down.
You don't get that very often, and obviously because of the
history. And you're
not
going to get it very often from a lot of fan bases, but you will from Oklahoma.
Oklahoma fans really like doing that.
Yes.
Especially because of the history. But if you think about it, it's like, they lost to Georgia and Alabama, obviously. But
that's the thing.
They
beat
Florida now. They're 2-2, right?
If you're in this part of the country, you'll sometimes sit and watch Arkansas games, and you'll sit and watch Texas A&M games.
Well, you got to live around the people.
Yeah, and you watch Tennessee maybe, but I like watching SEC football. But it is ridiculous when the fans of the teams chant that so enthusiastically, and those are usually the teams like Ole Miss that haven't done shit. So why not?
I think that's probably the biggest point of contention with everybody is just the fact that, like, do you see a Kentucky coach was, like, talking shit on Twitter tonight?
No.
That's not the Florida team that we played.
Oh,
you can say SEC all you want, but that's not the Florida team. Like, who are you? Kentucky?
Yeah, you're Kentucky.
Like, I'm not going to make a big deal about it
Kentucky.
I like Mark Stoops, but.
Fine, Kentucky. Let's strap them up next week and see what happens.
Yeah, like, schedule it up.
Let's have you play Texas before you play us. Because they'll probably embarrass you.
Casey Thompson, Lil Thurm throwing for 500 yards.
Good to see.
That was cool. No, it was, it was for what everything was, and I think, it's probably been written about, but for what everything was this year, it was the perfect ending to a season that has just been so weird.
And Lincoln Riley, after the game, part of what he said when I asked him about that stuff, It's kind of one of those things you can't help yourself but wonder, what would this team do against Notre Dame, Ohio State?
The way they played tonight,
could they
I would
play
love
with
to
Alabama?
See it. I'd love to see it. I'd love to see it.
Could they?
Because there were, like, even as well as they played, and obviously they pulled away in the second half. There's still a moment there where it's you get that third interception and you're driving. I think it was. Somebody had the big play. I think Ramondre had a big run.
Got the Cotton Bowl coming on.
And it was one of those things. It's like, you got to score there. Go up 21 instead of kicking the field goal, because then you let them kind of back in the game with the 17-7, and then you fumble. Like, the second quarter still wasn't just the prettiest thing.
Coming out of halftime.
It was the last 3 minutes.
Florida had the ball. if they could have done something with it, it might have tightened everybody's sphincter, and who knows what happens from that point. But they traded punts, and then OU just decided to stop screwing around, and they put up two scores, and then they just kept slowly adding to it. And then they realized that Florida was not tackling any longer, and all they had to do was run the ball. Even with Chandler Morris, just run the ball.
I mean, Marcus Major just, he was averaging like 10 yards a carry on the on that final drive, on the final, you know, real drive for Oklahoma. It was just incredible.
But, I mean, it's like now we're sitting here rewatching the replay. Kyle Trask completes the first pass, and then what happens? Next play, pick six.
I was super surprised that I just didn't feel like his arm strength was very good.
No, and we've seen good arms. I mean, Trey Norwood, he's playing. Why are you playing 8 yards off the ball, Trey?
Trey Norwood's another guy that I just, like, I remember.
He's just a playmaker, dude.
I remember going back to, you know, I think it was a U40 or something right before the season started last year. I was like, I just don't think they're going to miss him that much. And then, you know, I remember Alex Grinch went on, like, that big tirade about, you know, how important he was going to be to the defense and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And, I mean, he is just, he is a very good football player.
He's like the one guy that came in there. And everybody was like, oh, yeah, he's pretty good in practice, and we like him. He's a teammate. We all like him. And then he started intercepting passes in a game, and everybody was like, shit, he's doing it? I could do it.
11 takeaways in the last 6 games for Oklahoma this year. I mean, that's right at the speed D mantra, isn't it?
Yeah.
The two turnovers
two
a game.
Yeah.
And obviously they won 8 in a row. It's just, it's incredible. I still don't think that I truly have grasped, like, how much this thing has turned around defensively.
And I will say this, too. Just talking to Spencer Rattler after the game and
that
just
was the
watching
most confident
his reaction.
That I've seen him all year.
This is his team now.
Yeah, yeah.
He is now entering into that Baker kind of command
100%.
Of the team. I am leading this thing.
Sure.
I think he does a really good job of not just speaking bullshit.
Yeah.
Like, he's honest. Like, he assesses where they are, if they're not there yet, and he's not just blowing smoke.
There was, it was after the 73-yard run by McGowan. You know, you could tell that he was really pumped up, and he went over and talked to Riley on the sidelines, and then he came back over to the huddle. And there, I'll put it up on the board because I got pretty good video of it. But you could just tell, like, everybody looked to him.
Uh-huh.
And he, you know, of course, they. I think they ended up settling for the field goal. Didn't they score and then it was called back maybe?
Yeah, they had a hold.
Yeah. But anyways, it was just like one of those moments that I was like, this is his group. This is definitely like moving into the future. We're seeing it right before our eyes.
Yeah, and you do really feel that from him when he talks. Just the way he just seems like their spokesman now.
Yeah, for sure.
And everybody kind of looks to him to what he's going to say.
For sure. And I think that's what's going to be interesting about the defensive side of the ball is who's going to be that guy if a Ronnie Perkins does leave.
Well, here's the thing. I mean, you know, and Spencer, I think, is getting it, but he also has to be the guy that when the defense gets him up 17-0, that they don't take their foot off the pedal.
Sure.
They're not that team yet.
Sure.
And I think Spencer knows that.
I mean
that was like 41-16 in play differential there.
Yeah,
because they had 3 picks and like Florida, they were moving the ball up and down the field. They would just make a mistake, and I mean, OU would take it would capitalize.
There was a point I think tonight where Florida had 14 first downs, OU had 4, and OU was up by 14.
Yeah,
and it was just like I think they almost had how many yards did they end up with tonight?
It was about 480 or something like that.
I think they had 300 something at halftime.
Yeah, I could go look at the cumes.
But I mean, it was kind of a weird game, and then you look up and OU's up by 32, or OU's up by 35. I mean, it was incredible, absolutely incredible.
I'm gonna go to see if I can get back into the stats here.
The other thing defensively from the postgame notes was that I thought was pretty interesting was just how well they played over the course of the back end of the schedule. And I think it's pretty obvious that people know, but OU held their last opponents to an average of 15.6 points Kansas had 9, obviously. Oklahoma State 13, Baylor 14, Iowa State 21, and Florida 21 tonight.
Here's how it worked out. In the first half, they went in halftime, and Florida had 313 total yards to Oklahoma's 275. See, like the first quarter, it was, well, yeah, OU kind of started figuring it out. It was pretty even the first quarter, second quarter pretty even, even at halftime. But after the half, it was 409 for OU to 208 for Florida. And that's because they just started running the ball.
Incredible. I mean, absolutely incredible.
But you look at, I mean, and this is where Oklahoma, you know, when they really get it going is when they're above that, you know, in that 8-9 yards per play. Every time they snap the ball, they're getting 8-9, even when they don't get a completion.
Yeah.
That's what they were. Every yards, average yards per play, 10.5. Like you said, highest ever in OU history. Highest in Cotton Bowl history. So it was just, and then average yards of completion, 16. What is that? 6? And then average yard per rush, 10.9, yeah.
Absolutely unbelievable.
I mean, a first down every time they snap the ball, either run or pass.
Almost more than that.
Yeah.
And there, I think there was a play, I think Stevenson had a run early in the game that kind of set the tone. It was like 3rd and 11, and he picks up 12. It just, like, OU had an answer for everything tonight.
And you know what? I was happy, who I was really happy for tonight, after watching what he went through last year, even though it wasn't that terrible, because, I mean, it wasn't like he had a Justin Broyles night, but for Woody Washington to bounce back from his bowl game last year.
He's going to be really
good.
When
he really didn't know what he was doing.
He's going to be really good. I mean, I think that I like DJ Graham more just because I remember him at camps more than I do Woody, and that's probably unfair, but
and
those,
he's long,
both of those guys
and,
are going to be extremely good. And then you have, you know, just it's kind of like you said. It's like the Shane Widers of the world making plays. You know, Marcus Stripling played a ton tonight. I thought Corey Robertson
had
a really nice, like, quiet year, kind of. And he's going to have to take that jump if somebody leaves.
You know, I mean, they really need Perrion Winfrey to come back if they want to be an elite defense next year.
Yeah.
I mean, they really do. Yeah. I mean, they could survive without Ronnie Perkins. If Jalen Redmond comes along, we talked about that in the pod this week.
Sure.
But, Whitney is such – Winfrey is such a key.
And I just don't know. It's going to kind of be interesting here over the next, you know, 24 to 48 hours just for the fact that, you know, I thought it was kind of interesting that Riley pointed out they're doing exit interviews tomorrow, then they won't see him for 25 days.
Yeah.
And there's going to be a lot of big decisions coming up.
I'm just so happy for all those players that the season is over. I mean, I'm happy for all of us because it's just been such a grind. It's been such a different grind.
Do you think that tomorrow when they do those interviews, they're like, yeah, you don't need to wear your mask. You're good.
Probably. I mean, they're just like, you know, I'm sure they'll be like, look, wear a mask, you know.
Yeah. But it's not going to be
out
like
and seek out COVID.
Sure, but it's not going to be like
that. But it's not costing them anything if they get caught up in contact tracing,
right? Or if they, I mean, you know, they just. I'm sure it's just been. It's almost second nature now. But just being in the facility, having to follow every single little protocol and all that kind of stuff.
Oh, I'm sure those guys will go out and socialize more now, and probably go to some bars and parties and. Just enjoy life a little bit.
I think the Bulls, instead of giving them bowl gifts, they should have just gave them an open bar the night after their game. They could be back in the college town, too. How about Austin Stockner playing tonight?
That was didn't play a whole lot, though.
No, and you could tell that they were kind of easing him back in.
I think it was kind of one of those, hey, you're not there yet, but you're medically cleared, and we wish we had another week to practice you.
I think he was pretty messed up from the staph infection.
He had a sleeve over his leg the whole night. And of course,
the first ball that gets thrown to him there in the red zone, you know, they go right at his leg, and it's just
like,
look
like that at all.
That's disgusting. Carrie's arm is
Good.
Pretty nasty.
it was like the Josh Heupel 2000 elbow for a while.
Like kind of looks like
I burst my bursa sac. This hurts worse though.
My toe is just now starting to feel.
Did I not tell you that I took a head dive into the wall?
Yeah.
Okay.
I realize it's that bad.
Oh, I'm hurting.
At least you don't have any face injuries.
No, that was the best thing. I remember landing and just waiting for my head to hit like the corner of a table and split open.
Yeah.
And when it hit carpet.
Or start feeling the blood rushing down your face.
When it hit carpet, I was like, wow, I can't believe I survived that. And then I got up the next day and realized there was blood all over the walls because I split my finger open and tore all the skin off my knee and my elbow.
It's so gross.
Every time I see those guys slide hard on the turf, it just hurts. It's like
you need to start wearing the sleeve
the
around
pads,
your house. Yeah,
the little stick-on things. No, I mean, there is a sense of relief unlike any other that I've ever felt with this game, and it's like I feel it for the players and for Lincoln Riley.
Yeah.
Like, he can just go home now and
release for a little
bit. Be around
his
girls and not have to wear masks, you know, everywhere they go.
Well, even the families of the coaches and stuff, like, they can go out and be normal people.
Yeah.
You know, as much as normal as you can right now. And
they've all been living such an extreme version of what we've all been
living in. Oh, it's just been weird.
Living in.
I think for the first time tonight, though, is like, and you could tell, like, after the game how happy they were, obviously, but. It was like the weight of the world had been lifted off a lot of people.
I do think, and I didn't get to ask the players, as the players didn't get a lot of time with the players.
Yeah, it's just tough with
Lincoln,
the Zoom stuff.
Lincoln did kind of hint like, God, we'd love to play, you know, some more. We wish this was a tournament. Like,
yeah,
I guarantee everybody in that locker room.
Well, they're just playing so well right
would
now.
Just love a show. And that's the thing. It's like with this season, you don't have spring football. They were so young at so many positions, especially quarterback.
Yeah.
You know, offensive line was the only – I mean, Marvin Mims comes along on offense. Defensively, all the young defensive backs you've got.
It truly is amazing to think about.
Marion Winfrey.
Like,
I mean,
where
the
this
suspensions
thing was,
they had.
Where this thing was after Kansas State and where it is tonight.
Really, Iowa State. I mean
– I can still understand how they lost in Ames.
I mean, we're two days removed from people still being – I saw the thing that you tweeted. I can't remember who was it, Keegan, that put that
there? Yeah, about firing Alex Grinch.
Yeah. And, I mean, people were openly hostile toward Lincoln Riley just yesterday about his play calling still coming out of that Big 12 game.
Kerry, there was somebody on the board tonight that wanted – I distinctly remember at 9:13 – that was like, I hope you guys don't let Riley off the hook for play calling tonight.
Yeah.
They scored the most points and had the most yards in a bowl game ever at Oklahoma today.
But there was a time, you know, when
I know,
they were
the
turning
thing.
It over. I mean, the most bizarre thing that happened was Spencer Rattler got goofy with the deep ball again. They went two straight just Hail Marys, basically. One was catchable. Actually, both were kind of catchable. The second one, Theo Weiss missed. The first one, Rambo missed.
Now, the first one, I was kind of out of position. I was going down from one end to the other.
It could have been a PI.
That's what a lot of people were saying.
Yeah, it could have been a PI. I mean, the guy definitely grabbed one of his arms. And it was, you know, it was a difficult catch. And I think the Theo Weiss was even a better play by the DB. But you're still throwing two straight passes 40 yards down the field. At that point they were still at 10 yards per carry for Ramondre Stevenson, and so Lincoln Riley comes back out, puts both Braden Willis and Jeremiah Hall on the field and Ramondre Stevenson, and you're like, okay, he's figured it out, like he's going to start running, and then Ramondre Stevenson fumbles,
yeah,
and you're just like, oh shit,
which was weird because I, you know, watching it live, I thought, no way the ball came out. And then they showed up on the big board and said, yeah,
it was
sure
just
enough.
One of those weird deals where he went down into a guy's knee.
Creed Humphrey just tweeted out a YouTube video. It's 3:22 in the morning, by the way. He just tweeted out a YouTube video, and it's Dan. The YouTube video, it's a minute, almost 2 minutes long. It's Dan Mullen wants a kick-your-ass mentality is what it's called, and it's a Dan. It's from a Dan Mullen press conference. I can't wait to see what this says. It's from back in 2018. The social media show done by the Oklahoma players after the game. I mean, my God.
Did that guy even play tonight?
I thought it was going to be really funny. I was looking for him.
He was like number 41,
yeah,
I think.
Yeah, he was. If he was out there, I couldn't tell
I him. Never saw him. I mean, and they had a starting linebacker that was out, and he was the backup. So he was supposed to be starting tonight.
Let's see. That'd be funny if he didn't play.
I didn't look at defensive stats for Florida. I got to do that real quick.
I mean, my God, I could probably give you an idea of what it looks like.
Hold on, I'm right there. Where are you? I'm going down and down.
James Houston.
And down and down. James Houston, one tackle, one forced fumble. And
oh, so he got the forced fumble.
His knee must have got the forced fumble.
Not a bad night, I guess.
I will say this. There were a couple players on that team that were just flat out pissed, and one of them was that
they started
Gervin Dexter, that number nine, big old number nine.
Yeah.
Which, you know, I don't like my DLs with single dumbers. But he tried to start some shit on the sideline.
Yeah, and that was like late in the fourth quarter, yeah. Too. Like, what are
it
you
was
doing,
over.
Man?
They were just embarrassed.
Yeah. They.
I mean, any
a...
of those guys that had any – anybody that played for that team that had any type of just guts, they were embarrassed.
Yeah.
And he was one of them.
I think when you have a max exodus like they did, it has to be hard to not necessarily get bought in, but, I mean, everybody's not on the same page.
But I think that's why Dan Mullen said the things he said.
Well, Dan Mullen's a little bitch.
I mean, you either have to paint it like we quit and this is going to hurt our program moving forward, or...
Yeah, but saying stuff like...
The 2020 season was over 11 days
ago. Saying stuff that OU basically beat our JV is what he insinuated. Like, that's completely throwing his players under the bus.
Just I think OU fans are fine with the 55-20 win,
oh,
though.
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's no doubt about it. They should have scored again.
That's just crying over spilled milk.
It's kind of fun.
So, I mean, from here on, I think the one thing I keep thinking about is, what is life going to look like in the spring?
Yeah.
What is life going to look like in the fall?
Sure.
Obviously, in the fall, we have a better chance for things to be closer to normal.
Yeah. No doubt.
But I mean, I just have to think by this time next year, with vaccines readily available, college football is going to be a lot more normal.
No doubt. No doubt about it. I mean,
I don't know if spring practice will be normal, but I think college football regular season will be normal.
And by the way, I did see that Caleb Kelly tweeted something tonight about September 4th, 2021, which would be OU's opener at Tulane.
Okay.
So, it's going to be a really interesting summer. Interesting spring and then summer for Oklahoma, just as far as who you get back here in the next couple weeks. I think, you know, those decisions are probably going to have to be made. I know that I had heard that the Senior Bowl was – not necessarily forcing people into decisions, but hey, we kind of need to know what you're gonna do because we're trying to get our game together.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems like, you know, I think OU's gonna have a pretty good idea, and I mean the expectations are gonna be really high.
A lot of the Florida opt outs were playing in the Senior Bowl.
Were they?
As was Trey Brown. So
yeah,
I think those are really good guys. They do a great job. I'm not saying they're pressuring people, but I think agents might have been a go between. It was kind of like, look, I know you want to play in your bowl game, but this is not your fault, but the schedule is all screwed up.
Sure.
We really need to get ready for the Senior Bowl.
Yeah, no doubt. It'll be interesting. I'm particularly interested to see how, like, I don't want to say national championship or bust, and I know that there's a lot of Oklahoma fans that would say national championship or bust is every year, but realistically, they're as close to national championship or bust as I can remember. Going into 21.
This could be... Now, 2011, they were the preseason number one team. That was, remember, when they had the ESPN docuseries. It started out great.
I mean, everybody remembers who the quarterback was.
Yeah, they went and beat Florida State. it looked like it, and then it just all kind of started falling apart. They lost some key. Remember Travis Lewis broke his foot in the Oklahoma drill.
Yeah.
And then he came back for that Florida State game. And what was it? They lost Oklahoma State that year because Landry kept fumbling it inside the 10-yard line.
Yeah, I mean, and Oklahoma State was really good that year, too. I mean, Whedon and Justin Blackman.
And that was
incredible.
Also the year they lost to Texas Tech after the rainstorm.
Yeah. Oh, Tommy Tupperville. He's a senator now.
I've heard quite a bit about him lately.
Probably too much.
Way too much, yeah. Well, he'll be on all your TV screens here soon.
Hope not.
No, he will be. There's something brewing there. It was a weird season. It was a really good season to win a Cotton Bowl like that, to be Big 12 champions. I think the main thing that you take from this year is defensively, Alex Grinch appears to be building something that we haven't seen in a very long time. Depth, talent, speed.
I would also say, too, that like it seemed like the way that Lincoln was talking about, we put up the video on the board already. It's in Bob's story as well from the postgame stuff. But it just seemed like I think everybody's kind of on the same page as far as coaching goes. And it feels like, I'm not saying that like Lincoln and Alex Grinch have this like agreement that you need to go play for a national title before you take a coaching job elsewhere, but it kind of feels like they're in agreement that they're going to try and build something here over, you know, the course of the next year, 2 years, and maybe give it their best shot to try and win a national championship.
Well, and I think the one thing,
and I think you kind of heard the players talk about it a little bit. Like that's the most open that I've heard players talk. Like, we're in a good spot to win a national championship, or we're progressing to be able to get to that stage. That was the first time that I think you could hear it, and I guess it's probably easier to talk about it when you win by 35 points.
And I think that's something that's, you know, you remember coming out of that big win over Alabama in the Sugar Bowl. It was like the program had kind of hit the skids a little bit. It wasn't exciting. No. And the university kind of oversold their hand on that deal. Mm-hmm. I remember when Bob Stoops and they brought the trophy out during spring football. I was like, this is not Bob Stoops. Yeah. Like, he's breaking all his rules about how every year's a new season. Just because you did something a year ago doesn't mean you'll do it again. And they went out and they had a disastrous season. He fired his entire offensive staff, brought Lincoln Riley in. Like, I don't think this is a we're back type situation with Texas. I mean, this is not some game that happened that you didn't expect to happen that cures a lot of ills in your program. This is a program that's been building toward this that has fixed a lot of the holes. And strangely enough, I mean, running back without Ramondre Stevenson, still a concern.
Oh, very much so.
If he comes back, he pretty much takes care of the whole Wheaton situation. Kenny Brooks coming back, that'll be interesting.
Yeah.
After
tonight, I just have a hard time thinking that Ramondre Stevenson's coming back.
You were pretty much like, as soon as you realized how many yards he had, you were like, oh, this means he's gone.
When I saw 179, they're showing his ass up on the big screen, like waving to the crowd. I was like, yeah. And then as soon as the game's over, he wins the most MVP. Outstanding player for the offensive side of the ball. I'm intrigued, though, with Marcus Major. And it'll be interesting if, say, like, Ramondre Stevenson does come back. Where does that leave a Marcus Major?
Now, I do say this. Don't let the Florida defense be the we're back for the running back position.
Sure.
Because that was a horrific defense.
Another thing that probably needs to be mentioned, too, is Anton Harrison's. I don't know how he doesn't go into the spring being the starting left tackle.
That's the one thing. That's the one thing that Lincoln really has to work on is roster management.
Yeah.
Like, what do you do with a Brian Mead? What do you do with a Eric Swenson?
There's going to be some tough conversations that have to be made. And, you know, I think that it's kind of what a lot of people are starting to realize or learn kind of the hard way, especially this morning. It's like the Jalen Conyers thing, entering the transfer portal. It's just going to be different. The way that rosters are managed nowadays, kids are going to enter the portal And, you know, this year's a little bit different than, you know, anything that we've ever seen. But I think that...
I just don't understand. The part about the Conyers thing, I don't understand entering the portal when you've coming off a redshirt season.
No.
Something else must have had to happen. Or he got disgruntled with something.
Yeah,
or
I don't know.
He didn't like school. Or he broke up with a girlfriend. Or, you know, socially he wasn't enjoying it.
Yeah.
It has to
be. And sometimes that happens. Sometimes it's just not a good fit.
Yeah.
Once you get to campus. And it'll be interesting to see where he ends up. I got a text message tonight from somebody that is close to the SMU program, and they kind of insinuated that they felt like he might be a Mustang with Tanner Mordecai, but that'd be kind of interesting.
If the NBA was in charge of college transfer rules, SMU would lose all of their recruiting slots, I think, for tampering.
Skip Holtz don't care, man.
Mm-mm. That's what they're building their program on. That's the new, like, you know,
maybe,
used to be.
Well, Garrett Riley's over there too. Maybe it's just an Oklahoma feeder school.
That's gonna be awkward though if Garrett's taking Lincoln's players.
They need to build a burger house in Norman if that's the case.
No, but I mean that, you know, your favorite coach of all time, Bill Snyder. I mean, he built his program in a different way that people weren't doing it through JUCOs.
Sure.
And now that, you know, Kansas State's trying to do it a different way with evaluated talent, but SMU's come along and said, "We're a big city. We produce a lot of talent. Let's find kids that are unhappy at schools and bring them back home."
I think it's genius.
Yeah.
I mean,
it's a better route than JUCOs right now, the way things are going.
Well, and the way things are going, I mean, 2-3 years, I don't know if JUCOs will be around. There might be a couple.
But not the systems like there have been.
No, I mean, didn't Arizona 2 years ago just completely X their JUCO programs out of existence?
This year when they did that.
That was just this year? This year's felt like 50 years.
So anyway, we're just kind of rambling on about other things now, but... It was
as dominant and as satisfying of a performance as you can get in a bowl game. That I mean, I don't think that even Lincoln Riley would have imagined that it went as well as it did tonight.
By the way, we talked about that there were MVPs on offense and defense awarded in the game, but let's do this real quick because we're going to pick just one. Well, if I can get my button gear here, let's do this.
Eskridge Lexus is all about embracing the best. That's why they are the official travel partner of the Soonerscoop.com podcasts. So it's time for us to recognize the Sooners' best with our Eskridge Lexus Player of the Game.
I just can't operate anything. I'm just horrible. All right, Eskridge Lexus... been a great sponsor for us for years now. For the post game pod, has sent us on many a mission, both recruiting and game day related. I didn't even bother him. By the way, I do have PFF grades, I believe, for Florida now. Because you know what?
I don't think they're going to be too kind.
You know what? I forgot to do one thing, which is log in. If we're going to pick one player tonight, I think we know who it's going to be, right? Or are you afraid that's going to send him to the NFL if we make him the Eskridge Lexus post-game podcast?
I'll get a Lexus out of it.
Player of the game.
I think we have to go with Ramondre Stevenson. Since his return, and, you know, it's kind of funny because we were talking about it just a couple, you know, I think on the U40 this week as far as the last two games for Ramondre Stevenson were kind of meh. You know, just like he was there, but he
just didn't seem to have that power. I mean.
And tonight he just was running through everything.
Yeah. I mean, I don't want to keep going back to how bad their defense was because that kind of discredits what Oklahoma did.
Sure.
But at the same time, my God.
Are you pulling up the Florida defensive grades?
Because
I have Oklahoma's.
I could do that.
Would you like to know who the highest graded defensive player on the football field tonight for Oklahoma was?
I'm going to say guess...
I don't think that you're going to...
You don't think I'm going to guess it?
I don't think you'll guess it.
It wasn't Boogie, was it?
Brendan Radley-Hiles,
okay. Yeah,
77.3. Nick Bonito, 76.7. Ronnie Perkins, 74.3. DJ Graham, 70.6, was number four. And then Trey Norwood was number five at 69.6.
And then Isaiah Thomas, right?
And then Isaiah Thomas, yeah. And
John Michael Terry played a lot tonight.
John Michael Terry, Pat Fields, Brian Asamoah, and DTY.
John Michael Terry had
top 10.
Almost as many snaps as Isaiah Thomas did tonight. 38 for John Michael Terry. Snap leaders, Pat Fields at 64. So he still really doesn't have a... Well, Woody Washington, actually, the most, 68. They're not afraid to leave him out on the field. Deshaun White, 52 snaps. That's a little surprising. Although he played really well tonight, even in the pass game. It's like you said, name me somebody that had a bad night.
Give it
up
to Brian Odom. I mean, he has that linebacker core playing pretty damn well here at the end of the year.
There's really not, I mean,
OU just, you could not run the ball in Oklahoma this year.
Shane Witter had a terrible score.
I know, and we were giving him props. Now, there was one time that he got blocked about 25 yards down the field. He's a little bit smaller. He's going to have to learn how to use his body a little bit more. But, you know, it is what it is. We saw what we saw. It was a very impressive performance.
Offensively, I'll give you some quick grades there. I'm sure people want to know about the receivers who did what there. Marcus Major, the highest graded offensive player on the night with a 88.6.
That dude is going to be an absolute star.
Spencer Rattler, number two. Number three, this one kind of surprising. And maybe it's because you didn't really hear from him or see him much tonight. Adrian Ealy at number three.
It's probably the best way to do it, right?
Yeah. If you're a tackle. Ramondre Stevenson, number four, and then Seth McGowan, number five. Seth McGowan only had six snaps. Six snaps on the night.
He had six snaps and over 100 yards.
That's insane. But as far as the offensive line goes, Adrian Ealy, 57 snaps. Tyrese Robinson, 57. Marquise Hayes, 55, because he got hurt. Anton Harrison had 37.
Did Hayes just get rolled up on that one time?
I think he might have just got some cobwebs because they were looking up. You know, he had his hands on his head, and Lincoln came over and put his hand on his head. And
I mean, when they were taking him off the field, I was like, God, he's. It shouldn't be a surprise that half of the offensive line is in the top 10, right?
No. Here's an interesting grade: Theo Weiss next to last. Which I'm sure he's getting dinged for a couple of drops.
Sure.
That he had tonight, and he did score the touchdown. But, yeah, he disappeared for a big part of that game early. Other than that, pretty much every – Andrew Rame here with 13 snaps and graded out very well. Anton Harrison, if you went in 37 snaps, he graded out very well. I will say that this, Eddie. I think receiving rotation – is going to be something that's discussed a lot during the offseason.
Yeah, and, you know, it's going to be interesting to see what that group can come in and do from the 21 class. I mean, Jaleel Farouk, Cody Jackson, can those guys come in and be difference makers? Is Billy Bowman going to play some offense? I know that I've just left somebody out. Who did I leave out? Now I feel like an asshole. At the wide receiver position. God.
I don't know. Our brains aren't working.
It's 3:40 in the morning, but my apologies to the first five-star out of Florida in the history of rivals.com. Yeah, Mario Williams.
Oh, God. Okay.
So, yeah.
Well, I want to remind you guys, go to EskridgeLexus.com. If you're looking for a new car, especially with the holidays over and maybe thinking about starting to do some traveling as things are close to getting back to normal. Let them know that you're a Sooner Scoop subscriber, Sooner Scoop podcast listener, whether unofficial 40, the Eskridge Lexus post game. And they've got great deals going on right now. All the 2021s are in stock, and you'll get an even better deal by just telling them you're a Scoop listener. And Ed Eskridge and the guys will take care of you. EskridgeLexus.com. Go check them out for more information, more contact information, inventory, all that stuff. I can't thank them enough for being such an integral part of our post-game pod, and they make us happy to stay up late on nights like tonight. Maybe not happy is the right word to put it, because we're usually on a Saturday night, and I don't have to do my radio show in 2 hours. But
it's just crazy to think that this thing's over. It doesn't feel like the season's over.
It's because it doesn't feel like we really had a season.
I know.
We watched games from home for the first time.
Tonight did feel like it was, I think Bob said it best, it felt like the old times.
Yeah. We're in a hotel room. That rarely ever happens anymore.
I know. Feels good.
All right. Well, I've enjoyed it. Yep. We will continue to pod each and every week with the unofficial 40, so we're not going away there. But that's it. And it's hard to believe we're not talking about the Sooners losing out on a national championship appearance. It's been a while since we've ended the season.
The end of the season like Lexus or Eskridge Lexus postgame podcast has not ended well the last couple years.
No, no. It's usually been like, the most what the sad hell happened? Sack podcast possible.
No doubt.
But no, they ended up on a high note. And you know what? I think with the year that we've all had, that's not such a bad thing.
Not at all.
And you can leave going, I wonder how well they could have played against Alabama or Clemson or Ohio State. Not such a horrible thing to think maybe there was more there.
Sure.
Than you got to see. So, hope you guys enjoyed it this season. We really appreciate you being a part of it. Still another signing day to come. Still a lot of figuring out who's coming, who's staying, who's going, who's transferring, who's getting the boot, all of that. So plenty for us to keep reporting on. Jaden Hazelwood's saga will continue, no doubt. And we'll continue to tell what we know about that on the Crimson Corner. So stay tuned to Soonerscoop.com. It's, you know, end of a season, but it's the beginning of next season, and that all starts really almost immediately. So thanks for staying with us. We're glad to have you, glad to be able to do this for you each and every week during the season when there's games. And here's to maybe some normalcy the next time we're doing the Eskridge Lexus postgame podcast. Maybe life is just a little bit more normal. Maybe there are more people in the stands. Maybe you're not worried about whether your favorite player is going to catch a virus and be out that week or close to somebody that had a virus and be out that week. That's what we all hope for. That's what we all wish for. And can't wait to see you guys when it gets more back to normal. Right here on the Eskridge Lexus postgame podcast from Soonerscoop.com.